Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. So we're doing a series on healthy relationships, and we are in the state of Oregon, so you might hear some downpouring rain in the backdrop of today's recording as it is hailing hardcore outside. But we'll be talking about relationships with God, with friendship, our children, and of course, our spouses. And if you're dating or you're interested in marriage, make sure you listen in on these marriage podcasts and episodes, because there's a lot of resources, I think, that will help you and you can glean from even before you're married. So it's clear that one of the greatest desires for any of us is to be known and to be connected. And oftentimes that is a deep desire for couples, and they don't know how to do that. And so it is one of the things that we're going to talk about today, is how do you get that need met in your marriage? We are going to be speaking with some experts, one of the experts today, who will be helping us talk about how to delight through activity, discover through story, and find connection through attunement.
Our guest is Chris Bruno, and Chris is a licensed professional counselor and the founder and CEO of Restory Counseling and Restoration Project. His colleague Tracy Johnson is the Story Work Supervisor at Restory Counseling and Editor-in-Chief of Red Tent Living. And Chris will talk a little bit more about how the work that they do together. But they are marriage experts of Thrive Marriage Lab, Restory Marriage Intensives, and co-hosts of the Thrive Marriage Podcast. They're colleagues of authors and speakers, counselors. So we just value and appreciate the fact that we get a chance to connect with you here today, Chris, and to hear about your and Tracy's contributions, just to your world and your reach. So welcome today, Chris.
Oh, it's so great to be with you. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, doing marriage therapy is no joke. I mean, it's an intense job that we've got, right, Chris? And the call, I remember when I started out in counseling, this was the thing. I was going to be a marriage counselor, and I just was so excited to help couples with communication. And then I got in the office, and I was like, this is more than just communication. There is a lot of stuff here, right?
There's a lot of trauma.
There's a lot of story, a lot of pain, and a lot of work that we had to do. And so talk to us a little bit about your story and how you, maybe a piece that drew you to this work and that shaped why you're doing what you're doing today.
Yeah. Well, my wife and I were living overseas, and we were in Christian ministry in the Middle East for about 10 years. And when you're in that kind of crucible environment in such an isolated and separated space, a lot of things happen.
Yeah.
As you can imagine. And so we were there during the decade where 9/11 happened, the Iraq War happened, like all of that was going on. We had the kind of global things happening. And then we also had some things happening for us personally and in our team, which then impacted our relationship and our marriage. And so when we came back to the United States, there was one space where the one university, one school that I was going to go to, and it was specifically going to be to get a counseling degree, because the people that most impacted me during that decade were the few counselors that I was able to connect with. And you can imagine in that kind of a space, I had very little access.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe 1 hour or 2 hours every 6 months is what I got with a counselor. But then also the authors are the ones that have kind of counseled me through my journey. And so when I came back, I wanted to make sure that I got a degree in helping people walk through the depths of their stories. So that's kind of how I got in here, just my own journey forward.
I love it. Now, you mentioned you were in Seattle for a short bit. You're in Colorado now. Did you go to school with, is it Dan Allender? Did you spend time with
him? Yeah. I went to the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology, yes.
Yeah, we're from Seattle Pacific University, and so I know that school very well. It came later after I'd already gotten my degree, but so grateful for the work that Dan Allender has done and would highly recommend anybody who wants to lean into that. So I can hear a little bit of his voice through some of the work that you do. Okay, so let's dive in.
Yeah, so we would all say that marriage is a gift. It's an amazing gift, and yet it can reveal a lot of our weaknesses, our vulnerabilities, and our growth edges. That's a nice way of saying that.
That's what we say as counselors.
Chris, talk a little bit about what you see as one of the most common struggles for marriages today.
The struggles that people come into counseling for, I will put it this way, are not actually the struggles that they have. So one of the phrases that we use a lot in the Thrive Marriage Lab is that the issue on the table is not the issue on the table. So what the presenting issue, what we're fighting about, what we're struggling with, what we're challenged with, there are stories that are underneath that. And so what marriages are struggling with today, I think are common across time, and we can probably put some major categories to them of, you know, finances and communication and children and in-laws and sex and like the various kind of main topics. But underneath those issues are so many narratives, so many stories that maybe they're aware of, maybe they're not aware of, that are actually the deeper struggle. So the bottom line is, I would say marriages are struggling with connection. Marriages are struggling with withness, and all those other issues that are the presenting issues are symptoms of the struggle with withness.
Yeah. I haven't really heard that term withness. Did you invent this? We should give you all the credit.
No, don't give me credit. Okay. It's something that I've heard elsewhere as well.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. We talk about presence. And so that's what you're meaning by withness.
I'm sure. Not being alone, going back to the garden of it's not good for a man to be alone. And there's a depth of loneliness. We've talked about the epidemic that's been happening. It's been since the beginning of time. We saw it in the Garden of Eden, but there's an amplified amount of loneliness and lack of understanding withness and how to connect by the time we get married. So talk us through, maybe let's use a sample example of a couple, and we can call them Sally and Joe. But they come into your office.
Sally and Joe.
Yeah, I have this thing about Sally and Joe. So Chris, talk about, they're coming in. And the issue on the table is they've just been arguing a lot lately and they want to work on communication. They're 25, 28 years old, and they have the desire to start a family, but really want to tackle this marriage thing before they have kids. We're noticing that more and more, that many couples are wanting to have it down before they bring kids into the office or into their families. So talk about how you would begin with them, helping them to connect and understand that it's not the issue on the table, really, that we're going to be dealing with.
Yeah. So I think with a couple like that, I would start with actually asking them first where do you connect? How do you connect? Do you know what it feels like to be connected to? I think one of my favorite authors, Kurt Thompson, you know, he talks about how we all are born into the world looking for someone looking for us. And how, you know, how do you find each other? Are you looking for each other? And what does it look like for the two of you uniquely to look for each other and find each other? And so I would work with them in some of those areas. Now, I am curious, Tara, what you mean by they want to have the marriage thing down, because if they want to have it down before they have kids, then I'm like, we're not going to be having kids, because, you know, it's just
that's part of the bubble popper. Like, we're going to have to help them with that.
We're just going to have to help you recognize that being human is part of this experience, and to be human is to come with all of your goodness and glory and all of your faults and failures. And those are going to need to show up in the space. So I would connect with them first around that. Do you know what it feels like to be attuned to one another, to tune in to one another, and probably have them do some practices there. But as we do this, I would be looking and asking them to really consider not just what's happening in the here and now in their marriage, but how was it that they experienced those same things or didn't experience those same things in their family of origin, in their childhood years, in their, you know, in the shaping moments of their lives. What was it for them that shaped how they are in the context of relationship? And getting them not just to like conceptualize of those things, but actually tell some of those stories to one another, to share the story, not just about the story.
You know, Chris, I'm not a licensed clinician, although I have a lot of high respect for you guys that do this work with the character and competency that it requires. I've been noticing, though, in my organizational development work and my executive coaching work with leaders who oftentimes are married and have families, that there's more kind of, we're trending in a good direction, a more of an openness to being able to look back actually in their past to explore what may be impacting their present or certainly would continue to impact their future from a leader development standpoint. Now, this is kind of a back door into their heart and lives. You guys oftentimes get that front door experience with people in the confidential space. Are you noticing more of an openness towards looking back into family of origin, or are you still having to work hard to translate the purpose and importance of doing that with and fight the resistance in the counseling office?
Oh, Jeff, I think that's a great question. I would say yes and no. And why I would answer that way is yes, I think people are aware that the family of origin is really the garden in which they were grown. And how can we actually look at the plant, if you will, if we don't also look in the environment? So people are willing to consider some of those things. And on a high level, and what I mean is like, you know, above the ground, we can refer back to my dad was, and then name some category, present, absent, angry, strict, kind, whatever word. And there's this generalization around how the family of origin was. So yes, we're willing more and more to look back into the past, but the tendency that I also see, which is why I say no, is that we want to maybe minimize the impact, or we want to dramatize the impact.
Yeah, I still see
that. Or we're giving more categorical aspects to what the past was and the shaping influences rather than the particularities of the actual stories that occurred, which then brought the shaping influence, the shaping power.
Yeah, I find that that's very true in my experience too. Just the other day, I sat with a C-suite leader who indicated that he wasn't sure that he had significant trauma in his story, and I was in engaging him. I had made the comment that most leaders, actually, we found, have significant levels of trauma in their story, and they just went the achieving route that, rather than the victim route in some spaces. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'd just like to scratch on this a little bit with you. And then I mirrored back to him something he had placed on his intake, which was that he was raised by a domineering mom and his dad wasn't present, mostly due to work. And I just said, here's what I heard you say, that you're not sure if that you had significant trauma in your life. And I gave a kind of a Dr. Vanderkolk's definition of trauma, anything that out of the ordinary that leaves us feeling helpless or powerless. And he still, the facial expression was kind of like, interesting. Okay. And then I said, but here's what you wrote on your intake. And he said, oh, and those light bulb moments, you have those too all the time where gently leading people to consider some of the nuance in their stories rather than just categorizing things from a minimization or a maximizing space is what I heard you say. Yeah, that just happened yesterday for me in a coaching session.
So, yeah. Describe what those look like in real. So what does it look like to minimize the garden environment, our families that we grew up in, and what would it look like to dramatize that for our listener so they can kind of maybe see where they would land?
So, I would say that minimization is by far the majority of what people will do. Okay. And minimization looks like, you know, it was hard. My parents, you know, there was some tension. My dad was strict. Now underneath, when you kind of, I love your word there, Jeff, like scratch on that, when you start to like peel back a little bit, well, what do you mean by strict? I have a sense of what strict means to me. What does it mean to you? And then you begin to unpack a little bit more of, oh, strict actually means that there was some level of significant like boundaries and rules. That could be one definition of strict, maybe even more than that. There would be some level of corporeal discipline that was involved. Maybe there was even, you know, outbursts of significant violence that occurred in the home, but it gets minimized by this word strict, because as a person, we don't ever really want to, as a child, we don't want to throw our parents under the bus. And we believe that whatever is happening for the adult, there must be something wrong with me as a child. And so they're strict because I'm wrong, I'm bad. And it's an easier word to put towards my parent than for me to name something for me, or for me to name something actually is worse for them. But then also, like, we have to survive the strictness at whichever level I just described. And so I need to just name it strict, and it's easier for me to survive it if I minimize it than if I actually name the truth of what was happening there. Mm-hmm. But we can't change things. We can't begin to do the work that we need to do if we just stay in that minimized, it was strict kind of whitewashing of the tomb, if you will, of where all that death experience was for us as a child. If it's just whitewashed by a simple word, strict, we can't actually name what was lost there.
Yeah. And so that would be the minimizing. What would the dramatizing be? Like, how would that look show up maybe in our adulthood marriages?
Yeah. So Jeff, you mentioned the C-suite kind of guy. I've worked with several guys that are pretty high-powered guys, and they come from pretty significantly traumatic backgrounds, as you mentioned. The dramatizing is this superhero mentality, this rags to riches, this I've accomplished something, yeah. I've gotten myself out of there. And some of the more powerful kinds of people are like, why would I want to investigate and heal my trauma when it has actually been the fuel for my success?
Right. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So that's the dramatizing, and the reality for me in that moment. Is it is true that that has given you some level of energy and survival and success. And at some point, the fuel tanks of that trauma are going to run empty.
Mm. Yeah.
And then what will you do?
Right. And either their spouse or their kids are often the marker for when the tank is running empty.
Yeah.
And it works well for us in our 20s and our 30s, but by 40s and 50s, they end up in our offices, right?
It doesn't work so well anymore.
Yeah,
then,
we don't have the same capacity. Yeah. So I appreciate we're stretching that out a little bit more, because again, us three might say things, and I think about the listener going, yeah, what does that really mean? And you just spoke to people that are going, wow, yeah, I do that. And then we translate that into the marriage. So when we are looking back and seeing the garden of which we grew and the environment, we can see our coping strategies and how we survived it. We can see also how we made a story around it and the messages, and then how that's how we got connection or didn't get connection. So talk a little bit more about the practical things that you speak to specifically, delighting through activity, discovering your story, which we're talking about, and connection through attunement. Mm-hmm. Take all the time you need to walk us through all three of those.
Sure. So one of the things that we fully believe is that story is really underneath all of this. And story is the currency of relationship. And so if we want to have more connection, if we want to have more withness, it is inviting another person into not just telling them about the story, but inviting them into what it feels like for me to be in that story. And so now we're in the realms of vulnerability. We're in the realms of empathy. We're in the realms of attunement. But as I share a story, and it can be a story of hardship or it can be a story of great celebration, you know, either way, a story is a story, but we have our experience of the story. That is the most important side of sharing the narrative, of sharing the story. So often what we'll do with couples is we want to invite the couple to share more of their stories. And, you know, I've worked with couples that are like, we've been married for 45 years and we've shared everything that we possibly could. Yeah. And we begin, you know, in a matter of like one or two sessions, like we are in some stories that have never been shared before. And it is beautiful to see kind of, I don't want to just say the light bulbs as if it was an understanding, but more like the electricity that begins to happen between the couple when there is a sense of like, oh, now I have been married to that 8-year-old for the last 45 years.
That's right.
And now I actually have a context for what I've been married to. So thank you for sharing that story. And so the idea of activity, story, and connection we have with the Thrive Marriage Lab, which I can explain more about that later, but we have 12 curated dates where, you know, great, go on dates. Every couple should go on dates, married, pre-married, engaged, whatever, go on dates. And what typically ends up happening in a date is that you'll go out, you'll talk about some world events, you'll talk about maybe your family, you'll talk about some struggles at work, you know, you'll talk about the movie that you're going to go see, you'll talk about how you love or don't love the food that you're eating, but you're not actually telling stories.
Oh, and you end up in a fight, Chris.
And, well, thank you. Yes, you end up in a fight.
This never happened to us. Oh, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So what would it be like if you had actually a guide where the activity is a story prompt kind of activity
that
leads your couple into a conversation about some story sharing and prompts that maybe get you to share some stories in ways, even if it's the same story you've heard before in a different way than you've heard before, to actually be able to connect there. And then from hearing that story, then it's like I said, that sinking down to like, oh, I am with you in that place. The beautiful thing that I love is that, you know, memories are just memories. They're just logged into our brains, but we can't do anything with them. We have to tell the story. We have to bring it into the in-between. And this is where I think, you know, we hear Jesus talking about like where two or more are gathered, there I am with you. There is a withness. There is an in-between of that space. So I bring my memory into a story form, start to tell it to you. Now we can do something with it. Now we can explore it. Now more questions can be answered. Now more truth can be discovered. Now more connection can be, more empathy can be shared. Connection can be made, like those kinds of things when we're sharing those kinds of stories. And when couples do that, I'll put it this way, it's far less likely for it to devolve into the fight that you're talking about and actually end up in a place of like, oh, I never knew that. Now I have a sense. I know you more. I understand you more. So that's what the activity, story, and connection is. And it's embedded within those Thrive dates that we have.
I love it. Now, in real time, so this is my counselor hat I'm putting on. I wear a lot of hats, Chris. So, and I've got 20 years of working with some pretty intense, hard marriage work. Betrayal, narcissism, you know, a lot of emotional abuse because I work with high-level leaders, many of them professing to be followers of Jesus. Majority of couples want this and long for this. And yet, there is a time where you're sending these couples out and they're doing this work and it's just not working because they don't know how to disconnect their identity from their parents or their family of origin. So as they talk about their families, there's shame that builds inside them. They're worried that the spouse might now all of a sudden, you know, box them in a certain way and use it against them. Now that we're going to put the abusive dynamics off on the shelf and just talk about the couple who really is for each other and wants to do this well. how do they keep from their own shame and triggers coming up? Are we teaching them how to regulate those, or are you just sending them out and then they come in and talk about what worked and what didn't work?
Yeah. So I think that's such a great question. Shame is going to be part of every relationship. Okay. Because it just is. It's part of every human
story. Yeah. It's normal.
We need to name that. We need to call that. And the way that I love how you just brought up the Vander Kolk definition of trauma, the way that I talk about trauma is this, which is similar, but slightly different, that tragedy occurs in the world. We can't do anything to we try to do everything we can to mitigate tragedy. We put on seatbelts, we take our vitamins, we do all the things that we're supposed to do to mitigate tragedy, but it still will visit because we live in a broken and fallen world.
Yeah.
Okay. It still will visit. Tragedy is transformed into trauma, where in the moment of tragedy, there is a lack or absence of kindness. Okay. Which then forms that trauma, that soul-shaping, life-forming, interpretation, belief-building kind of trauma for that person. And it happens at the earliest of ages. And so what ends up happening in the work that the hope that I have for the work that we do is that trauma can actually be transformed out of its powerful place of life-shaping, life-forming, like energy, back into a place of tragedy. We can't erase what happened, but we can reduce the power when we introduce and bring kindness.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the hope, we call our center Restory Counseling, because it is helping us restory what has happened. Good. In the course of that tragedy turning into trauma, we're hoping to turn it back into just a tragedy again. So all of that to say, when it comes to couples, what we are doing is far less about go try to do this and engage, you know, leave the office
good
and
luck.
Go do X, Y, Z homework, good luck. We're training them on what does it look like for us to sit with and bring a level of kindness, regardless of where the other person is. So when they're sharing their story, when you know, say back to Sally and Joe, when Joe is sharing something about his life, Sally's response is not about the marriage. Sally's response is about Joe as a person and Joe as the age of the story that he's sharing right now. And can Sally learn to bring kindness to Joe in that moment, and vice versa, Joe to Sally? That's what we're helping couples work on. Because if there's that level of awareness and curiosity and kindness and connection that is happening in those kinds of narratives, then when it comes to the eruption of a disagreement or something like that between the two of them, they have a sense that, oh, wait a minute, just like I said a moment ago, there's the 8-year-old Joe. I'm not actually fighting with the 40-year-old Joe. 8-year-old Joe just showed up in the room, and Sally already has an orientation of what it's like to be with him.
Mm. Yeah, and we're practicing. So those neural pathways and experiences of withness become the new norm and not the aloneness. And unkindness in our stories. So I love that. Thank you for teasing that out, Chris. I know that we're losing time. So do we want to end with one last question on practical, and then we'll let you share your
sure.
ministry and your work.
I guess it just occurs to me that a number of our listeners might be struggling and heading towards, they've been separated perhaps. Or they're pursuing divorce or getting divorced, and for a variety of reasons, some very valid, maybe even for safety reasons or around abuse.
For sure.
What would you say to our listening audience that might include some of those as they're thinking about the brokenness? They are experiencing the brokenness and looking for hope. Just how would you address them, Chris?
You know, I would say this. That I'll refer back to something that Kurt Thompson also says. He says that, especially in the context of a family, to provide the sense of developing a secure attachment with a child, the greatest thing the parent can do doesn't have anything to do with the child. It has to do with the parent's own personal work on their story. And so whether or not you are married, or whether or not you're going to stay married, or you're on the journey towards divorce, right, there is still wholeness and health available for you in the context of your story. And the brokenness of relationship is not the definition of your value or your worth, or even like that there's some, especially when there's like safety issues and those kinds of things, right, that you, kindness is actually saying to yourself, thou shalt not pass here and no more. Mm-hmm. I can take no more. I will take no more. I will move no further. Like there can actually be some significant kindness in being able to say, this needs to come to an end. And so in your own story, I feel like there's still so much work that can be done for you to come to a wholeness of your own self. Mm-hmm. And the couples, this is a generalization, but the couples that I find that end up moving closer or faster towards divorce are the ones that don't have a sense of their own selves as individuals. And so how can they then have a sense of relationship between two individuals? Because they're not actually individuals. They're just, you know, lost in each other.
Mm, thank you.
Very well said. Yeah. So tell our listeners a little bit how they can find you and learn more about these different pieces of how you can bring hope and healing to marriage.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the dates. So if you are interested in getting, it's a free resource we put out there for people. So it's at restory.life/thrive-dates. So restory.life/thrive-dates. You can find those there. And then also you can find us at restory.life/thrive. If you're interested in what the Thrive Marriage Lab is, that is an online resource, a 12-month kind of cohort course, marriage enrichment course that we have live engagements with throughout the year for couples to grow and deepen in their connection. So those are two that I would direct you to.
Perfect. And we'll have that in the show notes. If you missed that or you're running, you don't have a pen right now, you can go back to the show notes and grab that. And before we end, would you just leave our audience with a word of encouragement? Just something that, especially when you think about marriages and particularly leaders who are either trying to lead their kiddos in the home or they're high capacity leaders with a lot of extra stress on their lives. Remind them of what this is really about when it comes to their marriage.
Yeah. I was just yesterday talking with a friend of mine and he just turned 40 and he asked about 10 different older men in his life, several questions about what to expect in his life in the next decade, right? To kind of prepare for the next decade. One of the things that he said, I thought was so profound, and this is what I would want to leave people with. And that is that the best thing that he realizes he can do for his children is to have a healthy marriage. And the best thing he can do for his marriage is to have a healthy self. And so it's going upstream to what do we want to, you know, to pass on to the next generation. Let's have healthy marriages as being our primary focus, more than our parenting, more than like our, yes, let's focus on parenting, but more than that, like let's focus on having healthy marriage and then also having a healthy self. And so my encouragement is that if you even begin to do some thing, read a book, listen to the podcast, do some of those things, you are taking steps towards health. You're investing in the most important relationship you will ever have on the planet.
Love it. Thank you. Lean into this beautiful resource. I'm saying yes, yes, yes in my spirit of people coming alongside you in your marriage. And then if you are needing professional counseling and want to reach out, you can look into the Restory Counseling. You can also look at Living Wholehearted. We've got professional counselors that do very similar work. And we are here to help you wherever you're at in your journey. We also have executive coaches who come alongside and do marriage coaching. So maybe you're not in crises, but you want to do some of this work in a more proactive way. We're here for you. So livingwholehearted.com. We hope that you'll continue to stay connected. And if you really enjoyed this, make sure you share it with someone so they learn more about the Living Wholehearted podcast, Chris Bruno and the Restory Counseling, and just more encouragement for their marriage. And until next week, we hope and pray that you continue to be the leader you would follow.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.